मेलबर्न की रहने वाली डेजी मान ने एक घर बनाया है जो दक्षिण एशियाई मूल की महिलाओं के लिए खुला है, यानी कोई भी महिला वहां जाकर एक दिन, दो दिन, एक हफ्ता, एक महीना रह सकती है, वहां अपना समय बिता सकती है। कैसी है ये दुनिया जो डेजी मान क्रिएट करने की कोशिश कर रही हैं? मैंने उनसे और उनकी दोस्त मुस्कान से बात की है और जानना चाहा कि उन्होंने क्या बनाना चाहा है।
Welcome to SBS Hindi, both of you.
Thank you.
So, what is this space?
Well, so we just created the Soul House recently. It's a space for women who are Indian or Pakistani or South Asian or immigrant to come and to stay here just to have a sense of community, a sense of sisterhood, and to just relax. And we created it, I realized there's a lot of pressure on women in our community. And when I was younger, I guess I was in a bit of an abusive environment. So it's a space where there's no judgment and women can come and they can spend a few hours here or they can stay here for a few nights.
How did it start?
Actually, about like 6 weeks ago, I thought I want to move out of my apartment. I was feeling quite lonely and a little bit for my own mental health. It wasn't good to be in a small apartment for so long, for like 6 months. And I just moved to the apartment to be close to my job. And then I thought, well, you know, why don't I go move out? So I started looking at places to move out and I found this place. And when I arrived here, I realized it's on 1 acre and I'm in one cottage. And then I realized there are two more cottages here. And I thought, well, my first thought was, why don't I invite friends to live in the other two cottages and we can all, you know, during lockdown, have our own little community. And then I thought, no, my friends are pretty privileged people. Why don't I do something which would have helped me and like my younger self when I really needed accommodation? When I was 19, I kind of ran away from home because it was not a great place to be. And I thought of during lockdown, I thought, how hard would have it been if I didn't get to go to university and I didn't get to do my volunteer work and I didn't have a job? I would have had to stay in the house because I used to do everything to get out of the house. So I used to work, volunteer, study, just to, you know, I just wanted to be out of the house because it was not a loving environment for me at that point in time. So I thought during lockdown, I'm sure some people are in very, you know, home environments that aren't as loving or might be a little bit toxic. And I thought, can I create a space for women to just come here and to relax and be amongst a sisterhood? And that's kind of where that idea sort of, that's how it evolved. Firstly, just solving my own problem. And then I thought, well, this is really beautiful. And, you know, the place is like paradise. So I thought, wow, I didn't know this existed in Victoria. You know, we've got Edna Walling Gardens and she's one of Australia's most famous landscapers. And it's a tree house. It's so beautiful. So I thought, why don't I open it up to other women? And then I started fundraising to do that. And so that's where the idea sort of started, is just, I've been thinking about this for a long time. And I guess during lockdown, it also gave me time to think about what I really want to do with my life and how I want to create for other people. And I guess what kind of, I always think a lot about the future generation, and I don't really want women in the Indian community, South Asian community to go through a lot of the things that I went through. I don't think it should be like that.
And Muskan, when did you hear about it?
So Daisy and I recently became friends. Through Instagram. Mm-hmm. Through online. She saw me doing some of my advocate stuff. So I advocate for women's empowerment in more the Punjabi community. Now it's becoming more India-wide. But I was just talking about women and abuse as well. So in our culture, there's a big part of tolerating it. You know, my family has tolerated it, my nani, dadi, parnani. And I thought, well, somebody has to kind of break the chain. Because even if I will tolerate it, again, I don't want my next generation to tolerate it. I am more the angry type, fighting with everyone. She's more, it's okay, you can come here, you know? And so during my anger, I'm like, well, you can go to Daisy if you want. So I kind of give her company. I'm here. I talk about this place. Because we know a lot of people in the Indian community here. And it's not uncommon for women to go through things. And we're not telling them, leave your husband. It's fine. Stay with your husband. We just want you to have a place to go. Know that it's here.
Yeah. And it's non-judgmental. So yeah. It takes a long time for women to leave abusive relationships if they ever choose to leave. And so it's not like we're telling them to leave and, you know, that their families are bad people. You know, I understand that our families have been through things as well. So yeah. It's like the way they behave towards us is the best they did with their conditioning and their own oppression and, you know, their own inability to deal with their emotions, which sometimes came out as anger onto us and rage onto us. So it's not about judgment. And that's sort of, yeah, that's sort of the message we want to send out there, that it's not, it's a space where you can just have fun and be amongst a sisterhood.
So it's, although it's only been 6 weeks, have you got some response? Have you got some guests?
Yeah, well, I shared it originally, the story I shared about my personal experience, that reached almost about 2 million people across Facebook groups and things like that. And we've had hundreds of like inquiries, and I'm all managing it through my Facebook because that's where people prefer to contact me. I realize even though I have a website and a form, they don't want to fill that out. They want to do it on Facebook, which is fine. So I make myself as available as I can. Most people reaching out want to donate and help. So we've raised about $20,000, which is good because I originally put my savings into this place and I was happy to put my savings in, but I thought hopefully I can fundraise in because I also have a mortgage. And I thought, okay, so that's been great. And then I think there's about 25, 30 women who've gotten in touch who are in need, and about 7 have come and stayed overnight here already in the last month. And about 10 in total have come to visit the place and spend some time here because some women are too, you know, it's really hard when you're raised in an environment where you're told that respect is obedience, you know, kana mano, listen to us, we're older than you. You sort of, and you're not allowed out as much after dark, or you're not allowed to wear shorts. I wasn't, you know, there's so many rules. And then when you leave home, if you didn't rebel in any way, I rebelled in every way, but if you didn't rebel in any way, you're like, you're almost like adopted into your partner's family. And if that partner is loving and kind, that's great. If they are not, it's a situation ripe to be, to take advantage of you because you've never been anywhere. Like we've had girls who have come here and said, you know, when I got married, I just got, don't judge me, but I was hoping I'd get to travel. Like, and I didn't realize. And now it's like this bad, like he's, you know, and they'll say things like, oh no, he's not abusive, he just hits me sometimes. Like, and these are girls from Australia. So it's like, wow, like Indian Australians. And it's like, they don't really know what this is. Despite all the campaigns about domestic violence and Australia and all that, we don't have enough culturally aware spaces for them to come with no judgment.
Because I guess when you go to other, there are other organizations helping women, but they're very Australia culture based. Mm-hmm. If you don't like where you're living, you can leave your husband, you can do this. When you go from a family where you're submissive and you go and you marry someone, first of all, you don't marry someone to leave them. Do you know what I mean? They don't want to leave their husband. They want to be loved and they want to love. So we are in no place to tell someone what to do, but we want them to know that we understand your culture. We understand how you grew up. We understand you might not be able to make your own decisions all the time, but you're growing, you're getting there. That's what the kind of space is. Because there are other spaces, they just are
different. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't.
And there are very few Indian women in those spaces. Like I've also joined Facebook groups about domestic violence in Australia. 95% is white. Like there's no Indian women in those. So I've been promoting this more through Indian women Facebook groups. And that's where how we people have reached out to us now.
How does it work? I mean, suppose I am an abused woman. I come to you for a night and then go back to the same environment. How does it help me?
So I think there's a few things. One is we're open to people who, they don't have to be abused right now. There was a girl who came here who was Pakistani. She was abused 2 years ago, you know. She's left her husband. She's safe, but she's had PTSD. She's, you know, she said when she called me, she said, I just want someone to knock on the door and wake me up in the morning so I feel like no one cares if I'm alive anymore. And ever since she got abused, you know, she was from the Pakistani community, they oust her. Nobody wants to talk to her, right? So she struggled a lot. So one, I just want to make that clear. You don't just have to be being abused now. You could just come here because you're really stressed out and you just don't feel like home is like, you know, not offering you that supportive environment. Some of the women that we meet, they wouldn't, in their words, call themselves abused. So we don't want to call them that. I just want to be careful about the language because there's a lot of stigma. So I want to make sure that women know that it's a wellness space that they can come when they're having when they're feeling lonely or having a difficult time. So I just want to be really clear about that because we had some misunderstanding there. So how does it work? I think for a lot of these women, like they've been robbed of feeling their true power, like feeling that they are in charge of anything. So I guess when they come here, I used to think when I first started this place, I had a minimum stay 2 weeks to a month. And I had this whole plan of programming, right? And then I realized within 6 weeks, this is not going to work. Because the women, first they call me, they want to have at least 3 phone calls with me before they trust enough, right? Because they've already got trust issues, right? Because of their existing environment. And then after that, I find that they're more likely to just come here for a cup of chai and then see, oh, it's so beautiful. And I feel like I'm welcome here. And then they say, oh, next time, can I stay a night or two or a week? And that's how it seems to work. Whereas if I say to them, just come for 2 weeks or a month, which is what I originally thought. And I had all my idea of the programming, teaching them about some entrepreneurial skills, having a sisterhood where in the evenings we have dinners together, 7 p.m. we do meditations every evening. We still do that. But yeah, so I guess that's kind of how it works. Did you want to add to that?
How does it practically work from morning to evening, if you can run through?
There's no set program for what you do here, but it's more when you are in an environment where you don't feel safe, you don't feel secure, you don't feel like you can go out, you need to ask for permission all the time, you become a smaller person. You become less of yourself. What we're kind of offering is a way to find yourself, find your power, find your voice. You come here, you talk to us about what you're going through. We tell you we've gone through that. You meet other women, you kind of see, okay, I have a voice. I know other women that can, you know, that have gotten out of situations or that have found ways to deal with it. That's what we're offering. So how it works here is that you kind of just, you remember who you are as an individual. When you're abused in an Indian family, there's not one person abusing you, but there's a whole community that's silencing you. And you do become a smaller person. We're just offering you a way to remember you have choice. You know, if you want to leave the person, go ahead. If you don't want to, that's fine. But make your own decisions, get a job, be financially independent, things like that. That's what we're offering. Because you sit in your home, your mind goes on, and you don't know how to get out of it, you know?
Yeah. So if I can share, I'll share feedback from one girl, because I think that's the best way to demonstrate it. Because even I didn't know what was possible in a short period. I just thought when I was 19, I would have, you know, I was going house to house. I was technically I realize now I'm at the legal definition of homelessness. Like I was staying at a friend's house until I had enough money and then I moved into different places. But I guess if someone told me you're homeless, I said, no, I have a home. But like, I just didn't want to go there. And I didn't tell anyone about, you know, what I was feeling at that time until this year, because I just felt like, oh, this is every Indian family. If I'm going to rebel and make my own choices, of course I'm going to cop this. You know, I deserve this because I don't obey them. So I'll read you quickly feedback from one girl who came here. She was 24 years old. She was doing a PhD and she'd sort of dropped out of her PhD just to try and make her marriage work. And she was married at the age of 22. She's raised in Australia, but you know, we place so much pressure on marriage being the everything. She's putting her everything into it. So she just stayed. She was going to stay a month, but she ended up staying one night because, again, you know, she did want to go back home and try. But even after that one night, she sent me this message. She said, hi, Daisy. Thank you so, so, so much for your support. Words can't do enough justice for what you've done for me and girls like me. I felt so energized from just spending one day with you at the Soul House and meeting your sister who has been through some similar situation gave me so much more courage, power, and hope. She's such a strong woman. I just want to let you know that I finally gathered the courage to speak to my parents about my situation and that I'm planning on getting a divorce. I thought they would be worried and upset, and I was afraid of raising this during a time that my dad is very sick. But to my surprise, they were so supportive. What I thought was my biggest weakness is actually my strength. The idea of writing the letter really helped me clarify what I wanted and how I should have a conversation with my parents. Thank you immensely for empowering me. I love you so much. So this is just, she stayed a night and she had not told her parents what was going on for 2 years. She told no friends, no psychologist, no one. And this was someone who said, oh, when I said to her, is your partner abusive? She said, no, he just hits me sometimes. Like this is, you know, so this is kind of what we mean by spending time around other empowered women and just remembering that they're worthy, they're loved, they're safe. That just does immense things to remind you of your truth, of what you're capable of.
And do you have this apprehension that this place doesn't end up as a picnic place for privileged women?
I don't, not really, because that's the people reaching out to us are not privileged people. Like, and even if they are privileged, if they're abused, you know. What is privilege when you're abused? It doesn't matter how much money you have if you're abused.
No, not in that sense. When I say privilege, it doesn't mean the rich or the resourceful. It means people who are not in abusive environment, who just want to go out and have fun.
Well, you know what? Actually, what the plan for this space is for 10 months of the year, it's more for people in need. But throughout the year, we're going to have retreats. Some of those retreats are open to anyone who just wants a break. And those we're going to charge And the money from that then goes into funding it for those who cannot afford it. Yeah. So it's a bit of a social impact model, which makes it sustainable and less like right now. I have a very generous, beautiful community who've given us money to fundraise, but I don't want to rely on them forever. I don't want to keep asking. So my plan is to have like wellness retreats, because we have a beautiful place, and then like for a week or a few days, and then the money from that will go into that. So I don't mind if privileged people want to come and have a picnic, sure, they can come and they can pay, but there will be designated dates for that, and it'll be a place for their well-being, and I'm open to that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Muskan, do you speak to these people who are living here? What do you get out of it?
I'm more the stand-up comedian, I think. She talks.
She's the resident stand-up comedian.
She talks to them about their feelings, and I come in and I'm like, you still haven't left your husband? I'm like, I think it's time. So I think we just give them different perspectives. So uh-huh. She talks about healing, and I talk about, you know, history, and I talk about Punjab and where you've come from, you know, what are your parents like?
Culture.
Yeah. I talk to them more about culture, and I'm like, you know, where you've come from. You're so strong. I'm like, you know, how do your parents feel? Just basic who they are. I want them to be able to enjoy who they are, tell me all about them, you know, and I tell them, and it's more of a, I'm just a friend in need. So they know that if they need, they can call me, they have my number, they text me. Yeah.
We've got a WhatsApp group for when we leave as well. And so one of the women that stayed here one day, she's come back three times. So like, it's kind of like it's a sisterhood. Like she used to say before, her husband used to go out drinking with his mates, and she used to pick him, drop him, everything. And she had nowhere to go. And now she says to him, I'm going to hang out with my friends too. So now she actually has somewhere to go where she can hang out with us. And we don't treat her like, I'm not providing a service to her. We just treat everyone who comes here like friends. Like you would want like that sister or a relative to treat you. That's kind of what we want to approach it. There's no stigma. I don't see anyone who comes here lesser than me or as a client. I don't see it that way.
But is it just a world without men?
Is that so bad?
No, we've looked again with the retreats we're contemplating. We might have mixed gender retreats, but we'll make it clear. It's a world without judgment. Look, let's be honest. A lot of people abused by their mothers or their, you know, family, women too. Women can uphold patriarchal ways. I've seen it in my life. I've seen, daughters come back to their mothers and say, I was being abused. And their parents say, well, you got married, now leave, get out. We don't care. You know, we married you off. You're not our responsibility. So a world without women, I don't know what you mean by that, but I guess what I can say is like, it's more a world with love, with laughter, with consciousness, and, you know, creating space. And that's sort of genderless in some ways. We just know right now that it's more likely that women are being abused in our communities and they need this more. So we create a space for them. But most of our donors are men. The money has all come from the men. So I thank all the men.
There have been times where people have said, what about men that are being abused? And I've always said, I'm like, you are free to create a space.
Yeah.
I would give my money if there was a space. Yeah. As in, I wouldn't see if the space is for women or men. You know, if there's a space like this, there should be. And I think there should be a space where it's only for men. If
there's lots of men's clubs, men's support groups. We even took some flyers from the local shops here, which were men's. So now everyone who says I give them this flyer, there are spaces for men as well. Yeah. I don't know if they're physical, but there definitely are groups and support things. So when people say, what about men? And they get all angry at us and sort of thing, like Muskan said, I'm like, tu kush kar la, like, can you do something? Mera sir khai janda sachi. Internet se baitha kare. Anyway, sorry, that's Punjabi, not Hindi. My point is like, you, why don't you do something? And if not, here's a referral of someone else, join them, volunteer, go there, you know?
Yeah.
Don't argue with us. We're just trying our best.
Again, when I said a world without men, I did not mean men who are abused and are men welcome here? I mean, as Muskan is a volunteer, can a man, a boy, can he be?
Yeah, actually, we have a gardener, actually, yeah. We've got 1 acre of gardens, yeah. So, bandhijine gardening karne aajo. Anyone who wants to gardening,
when we take applicants for volunteers, we look at who they are and what they're doing. So, if a man understands and he wants to partake, he would be welcome.
Yeah.
But yeah, we look at how they feel, what they think, you know. We wouldn't want a random guy just coming in to ogle women. We wouldn't, because we would know that that's what his intentions are. So yeah, if your intentions are well, you're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to give back, yeah. So we definitely don't turn men away to volunteer and to help out at the place.
This hasn't happened a lot yet.
What encouraged you to speak?
That's a good question. I guess lately this year, I did a workshop and with a Canadian lady online, and we were in a circle, and Valerie Kaur, who's the author of this book, See No Stranger, that we're all reading, and we're starting a book club at the moment. But anyway, she was speaking and she talked about this idea of revolutionary love, not just for our family and our friends and society, but she talked about revolutionary love towards those who oppress us as well. And what does that look like? And it was really sad because in the session, one of the girls asked, what if the person, like, how can we love someone? What do we do when the people who are meant to love us abuse us? And this was a girl from, you know, not in Australia, different country. And she said, you know, she told a very, very heartbreaking story of like the abuse from her brother and how he dragged her by her hair and beat her up a lot at the age of 36, very old. And she cried and we all cried together. We all grieved together. And I realized I've not told anyone anything because I've just been like, I don't want to be seen through the lens of, oh, she's just that girl that was abused. Because I've been a director of a public listed company for 4 years, the youngest in Australia. I've been the youngest manager at Deakin University with a multi-million dollar budget and staff. I've achieved things in life and I like my achievements to define who I am. Often in the domestic violence space, once you hear about that thing, I'm always that girl that was abused, you know? I don't want to be that girl that was abused. My identity is complex and nuanced. It's not so singular. So I never spoke up for so long because I didn't want to be that girl who was abused, you know, especially when no one else is speaking up. I'm definitely going to be that girl, you know. So I guess this time I decided, after hearing her story, that really broke something open for me. And I realized, wow, there's so much silence. And it took for this long for someone else to open up to me. And then I knew a couple other girls I know who are being quite badly abused by their brothers and or husbands. And I can't do anything for them. Like I tell them, call me. I know some of the girls and like they're being abused and I'm not meant to know, but I know because someone's told me. So like, it's pretty sad, but I'm pretty sure, especially in the Punjabi community, like every third woman you talk to will know eventually, especially when they're in the mid 20s or older, one woman who's being beaten up.
Every third woman is.
You're right. Every third woman. I don't know specific to Punjabi.
I saw it.
Yeah. So every third woman. So when we open this space up to everyone, I actually realize that every third woman will be someone who's copped this because it's so common. So that's why I just want to get rid of the stigma. And I opened up because I realized, if not now, then when? If not me, then who? Like, someone's got to do it. And I also don't, I'm quite confident now, finally. It's taken me 26 years to get here, but I'm quite confident. So I don't feel pressure of people's judgment on me. So if they judge me or this and that, I'm fine, like, because I have my own sense of security and stability. I am quite proud of who I am. I'm happy with the seva and the community work I do. So it's difficult to shame me or to make me feel like an outsider because I'm secure in who I am.
Mm. Great. Well, thank you so much. I hope this helps many others to tell their story, come out, say something.
I guess if I leave with one last message, I guess it's... I just want women who are listening to this, who are going through anything, to know that the shame is not yours to carry. What has been done to you, you are not defined by that. There is so much more to you and you are capable of enormous and amazing things in the future and even now, but it's just going to take for you to see that and for you to see that, to be around a strong sisterhood. And we welcome you to come here for a cup of chai. And we'd love to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for sparing time, Daisy and Muskan. And all the best for your efforts.